We are breaking down all aspects of Yankee baseball. This is the Bronx Pinstripe Show with your host, Andrew Rotondi and Scott Reinen. Let's go.
What's up, everyone? Welcome to the Bronx Pinstripe Show, episode 146. I don't know if you can tell in my voice, it's tired. And it's tired from screaming my ass off at the Bronx Pinstripes event on Saturday. Scott, what an awesome time that was.
You know, it really was. First, I'm so happy that it actually happened and we're moving forward now. And you know what the good thing is about this is that we can plan for future events, which I'm pumped up. We'll definitely go more into that later. But I don't know, having it in your rear view is awesome, because with all the planning that went into it, like the fact that it actually happened, was successful, people had a good time, and the Yankees cooperated 100% on the field, just made it an amazing day all around. So yeah, I'm exhausted myself. It's been a long ass weekend. I'm glad everybody had a good time.
Well, I'm gonna make you feel a little uncomfortable, because a lot of people came up to me at the event thanking me, and it was awesome. But Scott is the one who did 99% of this work. He's the one who was talking to the Yankees guys. He was the one who was talking to the brewery. He's the one who talked to Billy's. He's the one that sent everybody the tickets, which I know the process. He told me about it. That sounded awful. Something I am not looking forward to having to do in the future. So Scott, thank you, because that was freaking awesome.
Yeah. Hey man, it was my pleasure. It really was. It was something that was a long time coming. I'm glad that we could do it. We promoted on this podcast, we promoted on the website. So you guys have such a huge part in it. That's the big thing, is that if I was doing this by myself, I wouldn't be able to talk to anybody about it. So the fact that everybody listens to the show, which was evident at the event, people coming up to us saying that they listen to the show, saying that they, you know, it gets them through traffic on the mornings or their lunch break or whatever. Like, that stuff is so awesome to hear, because it's very difficult. I don't know if you know this, but I told pretty much everybody who came up to us that day, but you know, Andrew and I talked to each other through a microphone, looking at a computer, edit, and then throw it into the interwebs, into space. And it's hard to tell, you know, like, obviously we interact on Twitter, but when you see people in real life that listen to what you're doing, it's just, it makes it all worth it. It just really, it puts all the work and makes it worth it.
It's a little trippy, isn't it?
It is a little trippy, no doubt about it. There's no doubt.
My girlfriend was giving me shit of people coming up to me asking for pictures. She's like, you're like a celebrity, but she doesn't really believe I'm a celebrity, because she listens to this podcast and she likes to just, I think, listen to the sound of my voice. I don't think she really gives a crap about what I'm actually saying.
No, she's telling you how many ums you did. Like, exactly. I hear the sarcastic tone in your voice when you're talking about this. The people that know us the best can like completely pick apart everything we say, probably. Yeah. That's why it's nice to talk to people that we don't know as well. So, although people who have been listening for a couple years now know us pretty well, I think.
That's why the people were coming up and saying, I feel like I know you. That was, yeah. I mean, all joking aside, it's great. It's great to hear that. It makes me feel good. And I'm so happy that all the people came out. I mean, that's why we did it, to hang out with everyone who listens to the show and everybody who reads the blog and everybody who follows us on Twitter and new Yankee fans who maybe they don't listen to the podcast, but maybe now they will. So that kind of stuff is just awesome.
And I think one of the best parts for me, one of my favorite parts about the entire event, was hearing the individual stories of people coming up and just saying I can't remember their names. I'm sorry. Names are just like completely lost on that day. But we were talking about his dad and him having seen a game since 2009 together. And his dad came down from Mass and watched the game together. Like, that type of stuff, man, like, just gives me goosebumps. And I'm like, this is exactly why we do this. We want a lot of just awesome people who love the Yankees to come together and watch a game together and just be passionate fans. And you can see us. We were on the Jumbotron, like, I don't know, four or five times. It was evident. The Yankees knew we were there. They sent the camera guys over to us multiple times. And you could just see the passion, and everybody had a great time. It looked like everybody was just going live. I've seen on Twitter a few times, like, best energy at a Yankees game that I've participated in. I've seen that a number of times. I've gotten some emails about that same thing. So, look, if you missed this one, we're going to do another one at some point in this season. We're working on the dates to figure out when we're going to do it. Next year is going to be ridiculous. We're going to have a full schedule of events and games. So we're building on this. Like, we learned so much. I can't even tell you how much we've learned from just going through this.
We were talking the night of what we were learning.
Yeah, because you cannot predict everything. As John and Susan say, you can't predict baseball. Well, you cannot predict events, especially when you prepare from the beginning for 150 people, and then you get 300 plus people. It throws different elements into it. And we know everything that happened that night. We the good, the bad, the indifferent, and we will, you know, take, we will audit the whole thing, make sure we make the improvements where we need to. But I tell you, moving forward, it's going to be stronger and stronger and stronger, because I know the people are going to tell other people, and that's what makes it go, is the people in the community. So I'm just, it just got me so excited.
It was, you sort of started to mention some of the people that we met, and when we had people from Australia, we had people from London and France. I mean, that's a long ass flight to come over for an event, and it's awesome. I was actually talking to the guy from Australia. I believe his name is James, and I'm really sorry, James, or person from Australia, if I'm messing your name up. I met a lot of people on Saturday night, but he was, we were talking later in the game, and he said the last time he had been to a Yankees game was he flew in for games 2 and 3 of the 09 World Series for a weekend and then flew home.
That's ridiculous.
That's awesome.
That's awesome. That's some freaking ridiculous fandom right there. That's some like dedication.
I remember watching game 3. It was Halloween night, or it was Halloween weekend, because we had a party at my frat house. And then two of my other buddies who were at the event Saturday night, we were the only 3 people upstairs in the frat house watching the baseball game. We were in our stupid ass Halloween costumes. One of my buddies was dressed up like a penguin, and we were going apeshit over Andy Pettit getting an RBI single in that game. So it's just those kind of memories that bring back. And that's why stuff like this is really, really fun.
Yeah, no doubt. And, you know, to kind of wrap this up, there are just 8 million people to thank, because there were a lot of hands that went into this event as well. So just bear with me for like 30 seconds and let me run through some people, because I really do feel like I want to call everybody out, and hopefully I don't miss anybody. But first, thank you to Nick and the Bronx Brewery. They were such a huge help. I mean, the amount of beer that was poured on Saturday was ridiculous. I mean, for 300 people, it was ridiculous. We underestimated, but then we just kept going and reloading and reloading and reloading, and it was a lot. So I really do appreciate Nick and the Bronx Brewery. They've been great partners, and I know we'll be going forward with them to even create a stronger partnership. Photographers and videographers who were there capturing the entire event. I wanted to make sure the whole thing was captured so that we can have something looking back, and they'll be ready soon. Photographer Rex Free, who is on Instagram, follows us, a passionate Yankee fan, runs the Koi Bryant Park in Midtown, modern Japanese restaurant. So go by there and check that out. Say hi to Rex. He's also a photographer. He does an awesome job. I can't wait to see all these photos. And then Sess, his website is nycl1.com. Did all the video. He had 2 guys there doing some video. I cannot wait to see those video. He had some ridiculous cameras that we practically had to like barter to get into Yankee Stadium, because they're definitely not allowed. But those guys are awesome. I can't wait to see all the footage. I know everybody's excited. Some behind the scenes stuff, Bronx Pinstripes people who are right for the site, or some of our wives and girlfriends who are helping us pass out these 300 t-shirts. My wife, Bevan, your girlfriend, Leanne, Justin's wife, Allison. Thank you so much for helping us do that. All the writers and contributors from Bronx Pinstripes who helped us on the day of, and who they're obviously covering the event, covering all the other things. Rich, RJ, Tom, Justin, Joe, Roey, Adam, Jared, who got into a freaking accident on 95 and couldn't even make it. Sorry, Jared. You'll be there next time. Keith for doing all the Instagram stories. Like, he's phenomenal on Instagram. If you're not following him, check him out. He does a lot of our Instagram stories, and he captured the day really well. And then last but not least, everybody who made it. Honestly, like, that was the biggest thing. Everybody who came from far and near. We probably had over 200 locals in the New York tri-state area that came. It was just, the energy was awesome. You mentioned the London, France crew. We had a couple guys from Australia, Rudy and his son from Texas, a slew of people from North Carolina that I got to talk to. You guys are all the ones that make this event work. You make it awesome. And I really am I'm hoping you come back and tell your friends so we can build this community stronger and stronger and stronger. So thank you to everybody. Really, it's humbling seeing all those people there. And knowing that we all love the New York Yankees, and that's why we're there, it's just so cool. So I appreciate you having me out.
Well said. And for last thing I'll say about it, if people did not make it to the event and haven't seen any of the pictures, go check out hashtag BP Crew on Twitter. You'll see how rowdy we were. Bunch of videos up there, bunch of fat heads of Aaron Judge and Susan Waldman and John Sterling. So it was an awesome time. Go check that out. And we'll be continuing that hashtag BP Crew as we move forward with more events. So what a weekend it was, not just the event, but also the onslaught of the Yankees offense. And they wrapped up a tough stretch of schedule. You and I talked numerous times about how this was such an important stretch against the AL East. The team had kind of been hovering around 500 for the month of May, but they finished strong, 5-1 on the homestand. They have the best record in the AL, 22-9 at home. When they're home, there's something about it. They just mash the ball.
Isn't it? It's so great that that's the case, because all weekend, I was at the game on Friday and then obviously Saturday. The place was packed. The place was rocking. It was loud. I mean, you're getting that feeling back of this young Yankees team that has all the hope and promise in the world, and the fans are believing. Everybody in that place is believing. Everybody's on their feet, you know, clapping with two strikes for Severino on Saturday, for Montgomery on Friday, getting into the game, like throughout the game. So the energy is there, and it's very obvious that this team is feeding off of that energy, because the ball is leaving the park at a ridiculous rate when they're at home, especially against the horrible Baltimore pitching that finally...
Can we finally say that maybe this will be the year that Baltimore's pitching is not held together enough for them to make the playoffs? Because other than Dylan Bundy, they have nothing as far as pitching.
It's so we've been waiting for this. Like, for whatever reason, over the past few years, they've been able to string together some starters that got them to the playoffs. I still don't get it. But this is the pitching staff that I have seen for 3 years and get lit up. It just so happens that we have
38 runs
offense.
In three games.
That's insane. I think Aaron Judge was 12 or batting 500, 12 for 24 or something like that. 500 on the homestand. I mean, just terrorizing the Baltimore Orioles. It was embarrassing. It really was.
You mentioned that the place was packed all three games. I believe I caught the tail end TV broadcast today on Sunday, and Michael Kay was saying that it was the largest three-game homestand they've had this season so far.
Yeah, no, I heard the number. It was 46,000 and change for today, and it was a sellout. So I'm pretty sure all games were sold out. I think the Boston games were also sold out. So it's a nice little – look, the fact that they did what they did against taking that Boston series, taking 2 out of 3, and then sweeping the Orioles consecutive, like, that's huge. Against your AL East opponents, we talked about how there was a potential to create some space in the AL East with this series if they came in hot and did what they need to do against Baltimore. And that's exactly what's happening right now. So it's a good time for them to get super hot, because the fans were there, and now they're going to come back.
Absolutely. And it's just one of those weird things how the schedule works out, where they played a bunch of AL East teams early in April and then didn't play them for like a month. And they played a bunch of National League games.
Yeah.
Remember all those National League games? So we kind of just didn't see the AL East, and Boston was hot coming in. And they beat up on Tanaka, but interesting stat, other than the earned runs Tanaka gave up in that series, the Yankees didn't give up any more earned runs against Boston.
Yeah, that's crazy. It's a different lineup. That's one thing I absolutely have noticed. It's a different feeling when you play Boston now than it has been ever. I mean, obviously, we don't see Ortiz and we don't see Manny. I mean, it's been a while since we've seen Manny, but we don't see that big bat in that lineup. There's no big home run guy in the Boston lineup this go-around, and that's strange. It's weird. It feels weird.
Yeah, and I actually talked about that with Chad Jennings, the loss of David Ortiz. So if you guys missed that interview I did with Chad, it was on Thursday's episode. Go check that out. We sort of went through everything that the Red Sox have been going on this season. Tanaka, though, was pushed. He was going to start on Sunday, and he was pushed to Monday. So we kind of mentioned that on the last episode. Would they push him? It turns out they would. But they're still not taking him out of the rotation, but maybe an extra day, get him away from Yankee Stadium, put him against an Anaheim lineup, missing Mike Trout, the best player in the world. So kind of a good spot for Tanaka.
The best player in the world, not named Aaron Judge, you mean, right?
Right.
But yeah, no, I think it's a smart move. I mean, that was the obvious move. I think last episode I kept saying Oakland, we have Oakland after Anaheim, but going to Anaheim, whatever, you're going on the West Coast. And you're completely away from all the New York, the electricity of New York City and the stadium and all that pressure. It's a good place for him to hopefully clear his brain, stop thinking so much, and just go out there and throw. I really, really hope he comes back. Because if he can turn it around, honestly, like, as much as we give complete shit and we're like destroying Tanaka for being, let's think about this. Let's think about Tanaka being good with the lineup the way it is right now, with the lineup getting better going into the summer, with the summer months, usually when lineups really take off. Like, this is he truly is such a linchpin, because he can lock down the top of that rotation. And if we're scoring runs like we are, I mean, this team is scary.
Despite what people may think, I do want Tanaka to pitch well.
Yes. You do.
You mentioned Aaron Judge's batting 500 or something like that on the homestand. But Gary Sanchez is also finally on fire.
Yeah.
And his numbers against David Price are laughably funny. Video game stuff. Four home runs in 7 at bats.
Yeah, I love it. I'm glad he just started ticking it off. Yeah. Oh yeah. And just killing the ball. The homestand was great to Gary Sanchez. I mean, the fact that this entire lineup is just protecting each other, because that's what's happening. Because there's nobody that's really terrible in the lineup right now. I mean, Chase Headley's not even playing every day, so I can't even put him in there. I feel like he's getting a day off like way more frequently now. So the lineup is looking good up and down.
I don't know if you noticed this. I certainly did. Chase Headley was about the only one in the stadium who didn't have a hit on Saturday night until late in that game.
But he did have one late in the game.
He did. Yeah. He squeaked one out in a 16-3 ball game. Yeah. Yeah.
So it's almost, you're saying he didn't have a hit until later in the game. Nobody cared and the game was completely out of hand.
Absolutely. David Price, nightmare in the Bronx. The Yankees have been hitting him. And we said, these are no longer the old Yankees, so it's a different team. Yeah. Apparently for the good stuff, it doesn't matter because David Price has given up 19 earned runs in his last 19 2/3 innings pitched at Yankee Stadium.
Yeah, he gets scared when he enters New York and sees the pinstripes. It doesn't matter who's wearing them, but this is a very, very good thing because the new Bronx Bombers know how to take care of David Price, and that's a positive.
As far as David Price had two good starts since returning from the DL.
Yeah.
But if he's not David Price of last year, I mean, the Red Sox pitching staff is really, really bad other than Chris Sale. Because we also know that Rick Porcello is not Cy Young Rick Porcello.
No, that's Fluke Porcello. That's his first name. And then, well, who's the dude? I can't even think of his name right now. I'm so freaking tired. No, he just went on the DL.
Eddie Rodriguez.
Yeah, I think that was the guy they got from the Orioles in the Andrew Miller deal, right? So
yep.
That was the guy that they've been looking to, and he's on the DL. I mean, they're going to have to make a move somewhere. It's funny that we're talking about this, that they may have to make a move in their pitching staff, but honestly, that's what they're going to be looking at come the trade deadline.
Well, Dombrowski is, again, I'm going back to that Chad Jennings interview.
Yeah.
Dombrowski built this team to win the World Series in the next couple years. So
right.
You can't wait around. He's got to go all in on this team. He traded away the number one prospect in baseball for Chris Sale. You can't then say, we're no longer going to push all of our chips. We're going to take some of our chips out of the middle of the table. You can't do that at this point.
No, and when you guys were talking in that interview too, there were some really good comparisons when you were talking about Dombrowski's Tigers teams too and how top-heavy they are with so little depth, because if any of those guys got hurt, and we saw that happen quite frequently with the Tigers, if Verlander got hurt or Miggy went down, like that team didn't have the guys to rebound from a lot of those injuries. And you're seeing that now with Boston, and Chad Jennings was just reaffirming the fact that you know, they're practically their minor leagues. They're in the majors now. They've traded away a lot of their good. I think they have one more guy that's a big-time prospect in the minors. But they've traded away a lot of it. So they are – what you see is what you get for that team. If those guys aren't performing, there's nobody else there to pick it up. So it's very interesting. It's really – it's rolling the dice. So
Dombrowski tried this exact same thing with Detroit. Remember that season he traded for David Price and he had Verlander, Scherzer, and Price? That didn't work out.
So which is crazy why that didn't work out, but
they were the consecutive Cy Young winners at that point.
I mean,
and it didn't work out.
I think the big, you cannot overlook the fact that Dombrowski 100% did not expect this Yankee team to come on as fast like everybody else in the world.
Nobody did, though.
Like everybody else in the world, but that was the big thing, that the Yankees were probably a year, 2 years away. So this was our year, and potentially next year we could have it. But the fact that the Yankees are so hot right now and these guys are all just leaps and bounds beyond their years is screwing him, and I love it.
Another thing from that Thursday game, I was watching the ESPN broadcast, and a rare, insightful comment from an ESPN analyst, David Ross, was talking about Gary Sanchez receiving the ball. And he said that he slightly picks up his glove when the ball's coming in, so anything that's low, he has to sort of jab down to catch it, and that might cause some strikes to be called balls because it looks like he's reaching down. I actually thought that was an interesting comment, and I did notice it was happening. And he also had a pass ball on Pineda that shouldn't have been a pass ball. I mean, he clearly should have caught it. So as good as Gary Sanchez is, I mean, he still can get better.
Well, no doubt. I mean, if you look at, I don't know the numbers on how many pass balls he's had or wild pitches against, because some of those pass balls are wild pitches that, you know, depends on how the scorers look at it. But he's had a lot of balls get by him this year. There's no doubt about it. I was talking about that on Twitter. It's that's the eye test for me. I'm watching his when he's starting. It seems like there's a lot of balls getting by him, and it's all low because he's not getting – it's like he's not dropping early enough. And I guess that talks to what David Ross is saying because I'm seeing it too. I mean, it's evident. There's balls getting by him that shouldn't get by him, and there's balls that are bouncing – left and right when he should be squaring up and they should be sitting in front of him after, you know, the ball hits the ground. So he's not getting in position fast enough when the balls are down. It's definitely obvious.
It's the pass balls, but it's also the balls that's framing. Might cause a strike to be a ball.
Yeah. So and yeah,
that could really cause a pitcher to have a bad outing. I mean, if he should have gotten the call at the knees, but it's below the zone, but it looks like it's below the zone. I mean, that can screw a pitcher.
Yeah, also could go into the fact that maybe Tanaka's not throwing that splitter as much because he didn't have confidence on Gary Sanchez getting down on the ball.
What happened last time out when Romine was catching and gave up 7 home runs?
Yeah, I don't know. I guess it's that personal catcher thing went out the window.
Baltimore comes in. You were at the game on Friday night, and Montgomery settled into that game nicely. He actually ended up with a career-high 7 innings and 8 strikeouts. And I sort of noticed something about Montgomery because last time out, do you remember that game on Memorial Day against Baltimore? He was deep in every count, falling behind, and then he had to go to his fastball, and it was getting hit like batting practice. I mean, I think his best stuff is his off-speed stuff, and his fastball is kind of average. So when he falls behind hitters, he gets hit, and I know that's sort of obvious, but right. He moves away from his changeup and slider and curveball in the dirt, which gets a lot of swings and misses when he goes deep into counts and falls behind. So, like, it's so important for him to stay ahead of hitters because he did that against Baltimore the second time, and look at the difference.
Well, and doesn't that feel just like the absolute perfect growing pain for a young pitcher? I mean, I feel like getting into the rhythm of the count when you got to throw certain pitches, getting knowing the batters, because that's also something that, you know, he's not familiar with any of these guys yet. So, you know, when the first time you're seeing him, these batters, you're going to probably struggle more than the second and third time when you know them a little bit better. So I think just as he gets more comfortable and knowing what he can throw to certain guys, you're going to start seeing the adjustments on his side. And that's when he could take that next level. And that's what I thought we saw on Friday night, because, you know, I couldn't tell. I was sitting behind home plate and I couldn't tell, obviously, a lot of time I couldn't tell like what pitch was what or the location. It was just a little bit more difficult for me to tell when I'm at the game. Plus, I have a very difficult time paying attention to the game more than I'm watching it on TV. I don't know why. It's probably ADD, but he looked really good all game. Like, to me, he looked like he was in control of the game. He looked like he was in control of his stuff. It was just a really, really impressive performance from what I saw, live.
He was matching Dylan Bundy. That was a close game going late into that ball game. The Yankees broke it open after Bundy left the game. So Montgomery was matching Baltimore's best pitcher.
Yeah, definitely. And I think such good news seeing him go deep, you know, having that high strikeout, like that's all good stuff because that was his Achilles heel, or it still is, you know, just like you said, going deep into counts, falling behind, walking guys, getting himself into trouble. That's, you know, he's got to clean that stuff up. And again, I just think that's a young guy kind of, making his way through the majors, through these lineups the first couple times around, and he'll get there.
So I saw an interesting stat after Friday's game that Yankees opponents were 0 for their last 42 with runners in scoring position. So we get on the Yankees for wrist fails, but damn, that is bad.
Yeah, that's an impressive stat. I mean, that's a lot of opportunities.
Who do you put, how much blame do you put on the opponent in that, and how much credit do you give to the Yankees pitchers for that?
Well, I think you're giving more credit to the Yankees side because you're seeing different opponents, right? So one of them is a standard. Like, you're seeing the Yankees and their approach to certain things, yet you're seeing different guys on the other side of the plate. So I think more credit's got to go to the Yankees. Obviously, there's probably a bunch of luck involved with this too, because that's a lot of opportunities, but it's enough of a number to see that you're doing something very, very right in those opportunities. So, like you said, as we get on them for runners in scoring position failures, which, you know, this weekend we forgot about because the ball was leaving the park. But you
didn't
see
matter.
You see the opposite side of it, and that's good stuff. So, you know, one comes with the other, I guess.
What it really hit home for me is that every team, every fan of every team, is probably saying the same thing about their team and runners in scoring position.
Oh, no doubt. Because one out of three is a Hall of Famer. That's why.
But if you hit 300, 330 with runners in scoring position, you're probably going to win the World Series because that's ridiculous.
Yeah, exactly. So there's more opportunities to complain than there are to you know, praise the guys.
Holiday was at first base on Friday night, and it kind of got me thinking that the Yankees, I mean, I don't know if they thought when Greg Bird went on the DL that he was going to be out a month. Don't you remember they kind of sold it as 10 days, sort of R&R, and he'll be back? But it turned out it was a month. So could they, should they have done something different at first base? Could we have seen Holiday at first base more? Maybe get Romine into first base a little bit more, because Romine started slumping when he stopped playing every day. So maybe that was an opportunity to get him some more at-bats.
Yeah, but I don't think Romine's the type of – he's not like the hot bat that you need in there to stay hot. I don't know. I think he's still there for his defensive prowess. The fact that he got hot early in the season was just kind of a benefit, I think. I don't think they're there to make sure that his bat stays hot or put him in the lineup so that his bat can get more consistent. I just don't see that as a high objective. I think the most important thing with Matt Holiday, because we're seeing what he's doing. First of all, he is – A giant contribution to this team. The fact that he got put on this team by Cashman in the offseason, to me, is just looking more and more like a brilliant move. Because of, one, on the field, he's mashing the ball. Two, he's become a valuable contributor in the field because he can play first base occasionally. And he could hold his own over there. I mean, there's occasionally a couple times where he looked a little bit lost. But the tutelage, I feel like that is such an important role. He just feels like, it feels like he fits so well with the rest of these guys and in that dugout and in that clubhouse, that he's just such a powerful contribution to this team, both on and off the field. So I think that we really have to give Brian Cashman a lot of credit for that.
Yeah, I'm expecting after this season, like a 10,000 word column by somebody about how Matt Holiday really turned Aaron Judge's career around.
Yeah, well, and maybe it's the truth. Who knows? You know what I mean? Like, Aaron Judge gave a lot of credit looking at Matt Holiday and kind of mirroring what he did and seeing his approach. He's a big body guy, and there was a lot of that going back and forth and how he was just kind of, you know, emulating a lot of things that he did. So there, I'm sure that's a lot of it there, and I guarantee Aaron Judge would be the first one to say it too.
I can almost smell the first baseman situation returning to normal, where Greg Bird's making rehab assignment in AAA, Tyler Austin's rehabbing in AAA. So I don't think it's much longer that we're going to have to put up with Chris Carter.
Well, Chris Carter hasn't been that bad lately, to tell you the truth. He's been a hell of a lot better. I mean, yesterday and today, Saturday and Sunday, he had pretty good games. I think he had two hits on Sunday today and walked a couple times. He was on base a lot. Dude played right field, proving his valuable contributions in the field and how flexible he is. I had no idea that Chris Carter even knew where right field was.
They told him to go out to first base. Just play a deep first base.
Yeah, that's funny. But he probably did. Just kept going. And so I was like, oh, I got first.
It's one of those things that was late. The only time you see Chris Carter in the outfield is in a 16-3 ball game.
Yeah, it's like the slow pitch softball games where you run out of the dugout and you just yell your position and run out there. And then whoever gets it, gets it. That's what I felt like it was.
Clint Frazier in the minors on Friday had his first two-homer game of the season. And Ellsbury's situation has been, it's ongoing, right? He was close to returning, and then he had concussion symptoms return. He had a headache. This was back a week ago, and now he's sort of shut down again. So he's making slow progress. If Ellsbury's out for an extended period of time, do you think the Yankees think about Frazier as the fourth outfielder? Because right now, they don't have a fourth outfielder. They have Ref Snyder, who can play the outfield, but
yeah, I still think that it's not going to be Clint Frazier at this point. I still think that there are guys ahead of Frazier for that fourth outfielder spot, because I still believe that when they call Frazier up, they want him to stay. They don't want him to be a guy who just comes up and down. He's not that type of player. He's definitely not that type of prospect in the minor leagues. I think that he's in the same position that Gleyber Torres is. Gleyber Torres is going to come up when Chase Headley goes away finally, and when Gleyber Torres comes up, he's going to be the full-time third baseman. That's going to be the spot. He's not going to come up to platoon. He's not going to come up to play every once in a while and be a bench guy. He's going to come up when he's got that spot, because they want him to play every day and then come and capture that role. And I think the same thing is with Clint Frazier. I don't think they're going to want to do that. I think they want to give him all the at-bats they can at AAA, and then when it's his time, he'll come up. Or it'll be a September call-up type thing at this point, because the outfield is ridiculous right now.
That's the logical way to think about it. But Brian Cashman was also in the booth with ESPN on Thursday, and I listened to his interview, and he said the player is going to dictate when he gets called up, because they asked him about Gleyber Torres. And he basically said, if Gleyber Torres keeps forcing my hand, I'm going to have to call him up. I'm never going to deny somebody to advance a level if they're earning it. So if he or Clint Frazier is earning that level, according to Brian Cashman, he's going to call him up regardless of the situation at the major league level. We have to either get rid of an outfielder or get rid of Chase Headley in the case that you just laid out.
Yeah, well, I think that is the caveat. I mean, I think there is a caveat still with that there has to be, they'll earn that spot, but there has to be a spot for them to be that makes sense as well. They're not going to just bring them up to sit on the bench. I mean, that doesn't make any sense. So there has to be that spot. And with Gleyber Torres, there's a very obvious place for him to play. Whereas Clint Frazier doesn't have that spot because the entire starting lineup in the outfield is lighting up the ball. So there's nowhere for him to go.
Right. They have the excuse this year of we're contending.
Right.
Right. If they were 500 around August, then they could just say like last year, screw it. Let's call up the young guys and see what we got. Well, but if they're in first place, they can't just do that. I mean, because what if it doesn't work out?
Exactly. And you don't want to risk, stunting the growth of a player who can play every day against AAA pitchers, then sitting the bench and just traveling with a Yankees team that's already doing well, and then them getting discouraged or out of their routines. Because these guys who play every day are in their own routines as well. So they have a lot of things that they want to do on a daily basis. And to take a Clint Frazier, who for his entire life has played every day, he's always been a starter, and throw him into a fourth outfielder role in the major league level, I don't know. To me, that just doesn't sound like a positive move forward. And when you're looking at the outfielders in AAA, like if there's a guy that they need to come up, like Mason Williams has been in that position before. I could see them bringing him up before Clint Frazier. Dustin Fowler feels like a guy that they would bring up before that. Because honestly, Dustin Fowler feels like a guy that, or they may even keep him there just because I feel like he's a trade bait guy. But I don't know. Mason Williams is the glaring guy for that. Or Dustin Fowler seems to be the next one. I just don't think they're going to bring up Frazier until there is a real spot.
When Ellsbury does finally return, Joe Girardi was asked about this, and he said, I can't sit Aaron Hicks at this point, so I'm going to have to find playing time for all of them. To me, that sounds like Ellsbury and Gardner are going to be more of the platoon versus Ellsbury and Hicks are going to be the platoon.
Yeah, well, I think that's probably right just because of the way he handles left-handed pitching, right? I mean, he usually it's either Gardner or Ellsbury against left-handers. So one of them are going to sit, and if he's not sitting Hicks against a left-hander, which is the obvious, he's not going to sit him against a left-hander. That's just naturally going to happen. But I think Ellsbury is really going to suffer on this when he comes back. But we don't know when he's going to come back because these head things linger, and they can linger for a long time. They're unpredictable. So
that's the thing. It's even if he is passing his tests, he might be not fully there.
Right.
And I don't know how you even really evaluate that. How do you even really address that?
That's
right.
One
because
of those
a player might just feel off, and then he just is off for the whole season. I mean, I don't want to minimize it, but I don't want to overreact, but this could derail his season.
Well, there's no doubt. I mean, I think at this point, too, especially when you're talking about head injuries, you do all the tests, you do all the things that you can control and see, the reactions of the eyes and like all these different things. But you really got to listen to the player because they have to be true to their own body and tell you what's going on. I don't think with that type of injury that you could go out there and play through that. That's just not something you could play through because there's no way you could perform at a high level if your head's not right. So, they got to listen to Ellsbury and see how he feels.
And he's now behind a guy who people are saying should be considered for the All-Star team in Aaron Hicks.
Yeah, he should be. He absolutely should be. Look at his numbers.
He got Wally Pipped in center field, basically.
Yeah, he did. But he's got a lot of money coming to him.
Right, he's going to be a very expensive fourth outfielder. The most expensive fourth outfielder in baseball.
Yeah, Wally Pipp wants that money. He wants a piece.
Hicks is not on the All-Star ballot, so he'll have to be a coach's pick. He might be because he's having a great season. I think he's third for outfielders OBP, which is also crazy. I think I heard Susan today on the broadcast say he already has more walks this season than he did all of last year.
He's got everything more than what he did last year. I think everything, all his numbers have already gone past what he did in all of 2016. So the guy's on fire.
Are you buying it? Is this the Hicks? Are we finally seeing the Aaron Hicks that was drafted in the first round by Minnesota? I mean, is this the real Aaron Hicks, or is it some sort of combination of the bad Aaron Hicks and the good Aaron Hicks.
This is the highly confident Aaron Hicks that rolls. I mean, I don't know what happens when he goes into a slump because we haven't really seen too much of that this year. But when the guy's playing every day with a lot of confidence, this is what he looks like. And he looks like a damn good baseball player, a damn good athlete. And I mean, maybe it's not as this high, but it's not far off. I think that everything I've seen this year looks like he's for real. It's pretty crazy.
I really like him in the two spot too, because he's a switch hitter. And also, I mean, his on-base percentage is over 400. Aaron Judge's on-base percentage is like 450 at this point. So you get so many guys on for that meat of the order.
There's no doubt. And he's surpassed, going back to like if he's real or not too, Chase Headley, we had the real or not real discussion after that first month. And we were pretty much talking about Aaron Hicks. Well, Aaron Hicks has definitely gone past the barometer that we had with Headley, because Headley has fallen off the face of the planet. So we now know the true answer to that. But Aaron Hicks has stayed up there. He's consistently stayed up there, and we're in June. So it's not like this has been 1 month. This has been 3 months. So it's or almost 3 months, 2.5 months. Good stuff.
That brings us to Saturday's drubbing, 16-3. Thank God the Yankees got off to that electric start in the first inning, right? Could you have imagined if we're all in the stadium, all pumped up from the pregame party, ready to go, and it's the opposite, and Baltimore puts up a six spot in the first inning? I was just thinking that it really worked out for us and really worked out for that kind of event to have the Yankees just clubbing the ball around the stadium.
When Aaron Judge steps up and hits the hardest ball that has been ever recorded and hit all year long at 121 mile per hour exit velo, you're so thankful that the Yankees cooperated and gave us all these things. But yeah, it was the absolute perfect start. It was unbelievable. The game was over in the second inning.
Yeah, it was so much fun just having everybody go wild. And yeah, Judge got the scoring started with that laser down the left field line. I couldn't see the ball. I don't know about you.
I saw it leave. I mean, when it goes 121 miles an hour, that probably has something to do with the fact that you couldn't see the ball because it was going so fast. Yeah, it was a laser beam. It was unbelievable.
Yeah, I cannot imagine that guy who got in the way of that ball out in left field.
Someone caught it. I saw the replay of it again, and someone had it pretty quick. I don't know if they caught it in the air or they cut it off a rebound or what, or if it hit off someone's head, but someone had the ball relatively fast while the camera was still out there.
Yeah, and Didi hit the three-run bomb. Holiday hit a three-run bomb. Castro hit a two-run shot. I mean, it was just so much fun. And then all of a sudden, I look over in the fourth inning, and I realize Severino hasn't given up a base runner at that point.
Yeah.
And a part of me was like, oh, what if that happens as well? But as we know, we can't start monitoring perfect games or no hitters until at least the fifth inning.
Yeah, exactly. And it was unfortunate. I went up to get a beer, actually, and I came back, and there was a hit on the board. So I think maybe it was my fault. Maybe I got up and to get a beer, and that's why he gave up a hit.
But it would be an impossible. I can't imagine a pitcher would be able to pitch a no-hitter or a perfect game when he's in the dugout for a half hour for the first three or four innings of the game.
No, he probably wouldn't have gone the whole game anyway, right? They would have pulled him.
Right, exactly. I mean, it was so much fun. I don't know what else to take away from that Saturday game other than it was a lot of fun. You got any takeaways?
No, the ball was leaving the park like every 5 minutes, it seemed like. It seemed like I turned around and there was another home run being hit. And we were back on the Jumbotron, and it was just awesome. It was, you know, high-fiving like 30 people that you've never met before. It's just fun, and I can't wait for the next one. So, yeah, it was awesome. There's nothing else to say about it. It was awesome, and it was a
all I know is
slaughtering.
I woke up on Sunday morning with a headache, not from drinking too much, but from screaming my ass off too much. Yeah, so yeah. It was that kind of game.
Yep.
Sunday, they picked up right where they left off. 5 runs in the first inning. Sanchez, 3-run bomb. That made him the 6th Yankee to have double-digit home runs.
That's crazy. So,
six out of the nine guys.
In June.
Right. And he was out for whatever it was.
A month, 4 weeks. Yeah.
And I feel like Didi's going to get there sooner rather than later. I mean, Didi's hitting over 325 at this point, but he hit 20 home runs last year. So it's going to be up and down the lineup with double-digit home runs.
There's going to be a lot of 20 home run guys on this team. And I don't know what the record is for most 20 home run guys on a season on one roster, but I bet they're going to come close to it because there's a lot of guys that are sending the ball out of the park, and it's fun to watch. And I can't talk about this more, but the protection. Like, these guys are all protecting themselves because nobody wants to pitch to the next guy. So these pitchers have to be so finely tuned and throw the ball where they want. Because if they're walking guys, everybody in the lineup can hit it out. So they're not putting anybody on, which to me puts more pressure on the pitcher to throw a good pitch, which in turn makes them screw up because they're trying so hard to throw a good pitch and leave balls over the plate. And they're just not letting that go. The Yankees are crushing mistakes right now. It's amazing.
Sanchez, again, overshadowed by Aaron Judge, 495-foot moon blast over the left field bleachers. Michael Kay and Paul O'Neill were just oozing over it. They were speechless. Everyone was speechless. It every time you think, like, oh, I've seen everything from Aaron Judge, he goes and hits one over the bleachers to the retired numbers out there on the wall. And, like, we jokingly talked about it earlier, he's going to hit one out of the stadium.
Yeah.
Like, today was hot, but it wasn't that humid. Fast forward to, like, July 30th, when it's, like, 95 and humid, the ball's going to stay up in the air a long time. He gets one up in the wind. Who knows? It might go out of the stadium.
No, there's not who knows. It's going to go out of the stadium. He's going to hit the freaking ball out of Yankee Stadium. I have no doubt about it. I would put every penny that I have on that he does this for the rest of his career. Like, give me the long term on that bet, because it's happening. There's no doubt. Matt Holliday, what did he say? It was a post-game interview, and he was talking about, you're going to see some, he said something like, some stupid stuff from Aaron Judge if you're watching this guy every day. Like, unbelievable things.
Haven't we already seen that?
Yeah, but it's just going to continue to happen. And these guys in the dugout on his own team are just in awe of this dude.
Well, right, because then he hits the one in his next at-bat, and it looks like a cheap shot, but then you look at the StatCast stats, and it only went 43 feet off the ground. It was a line shot just soaring into the right field stands. And then I love it. They give him the silent treatment in the dugout because, yeah, like, he's a freak. He's a freak.
He is a freak.
He's now leading the Triple Crown categories in the American League. Home runs. If you told me he's going to lead in home runs, I'd be like, all right, fine. He's going to get 500 plate appearances. He's going to hit a bunch of bombs. But I don't know how. I cannot fathom how he's hitting 330. Like, I saw him last year. And I followed his stats in the minors. Like, it does not make sense, but he's doing it.
I don't even know how many times we could talk about the adjustments that he's made. My brother made a comment to me the other day. He's like, you know, every time I'm listening to a Yankee game or hearing somebody talk about the Yankees, all they do is talk about the unbelievable adjustments that Aaron Judge has made. I'm like, yeah, guilty, because I'm pretty sure I talk about that almost every show, because it's just mind-boggling the fact that he could go from what we saw last year and just looking completely lost to whatever the hell we're looking at now, like this unbelievably special season that's happening so far, because the dude is like the all-around guy, all-around baseball player, all-around everything. I mean, there's nothing he's bad at.
The Triple Crown is kind of like, I bet a lot of StatCast people would be like, or a bunch of sabermetrics people would say that's outdated because RBIs is no longer an in-vogue stat, right? Because it's not even like all up to your abilities, because you have to have people on base in front of you. But it's still like the holy grail of stats, batting average, home runs, RBIs. That's what's always listed on the scoreboard. Those are the first three things listed. It's the Triple Crown. I know it's early, but like, there's only a handful of Triple Crown guys. Like, that does not happen. So it's amazing.
Yeah. And I see, that's what I hate, these freaking nerd stat guys dismissing the RBIs because of the luck factor. You got to be, first of all, RBIs are a lot, come in situations where there are runners on, there's more pressure to get these guys in. And the fact that they're actually getting other people in as well is a significant value as an offensive player in baseball. I don't know how it's dismissed. I understand there's luck part, but there's also a lot of luck on who the hell's pitching to you. And if they miss, and there's a million things that go into luck in baseball. So please, stat people, stop dismissing things like this that are important and relevant statistics though. God. No, it's a huge deal. Triple Crown is like, to me, it's the greatest thing that you could do as an offensive player.
I was joking today on Twitter that MLB is going to need to judge-proof the ballparks like the PGA Tour Tiger-proofed golf courses.
Oh, please don't say Tiger Woods and Aaron Judge in the same sentence.
But don't you remember, like, Tiger Woods was just eating up par fives like they were par threes, and everyone's like, all right, got to make the yards, got to make them 100 yards longer. That's what they're going to have to do for Aaron Judge, because it's ridiculous. I mean, I don't know. I don't know what else to say about him.
There's really
ridiculous.
Yeah, there's nothing. There's no words.
Let's just get into mailbag questions. Why don't we? First one is from Zach Waters, and he says, I was talking to a friend the other day about Girardi's perception of being a great bullpen manager. I get all the advanced metrics saying he's great at making matchups and switching pitchers when it's the right time, but he really doesn't pass the eye test. Are you sure you didn't write this, Scott? I know you guys have already talked about putting Clippard in over Betances against Toronto last Sunday, but bringing in Betances for a third of an inning in a 9-1 ball game is absolutely mind-blowing. Not to mention that he had to face four batters and throw 17 pitches. I don't care if he needs work. It just doesn't make any sense. So if you guys missed it, an all-timer from Joe Girardi.
It was classic.
I think it wasn't an 8-1 game. I forget. But he goes to Betances because he needs work, and that with one out to go, just to get him into a game situation, I guess, in an 8-run ball game against the Red Sox. Classic from Joe.
I said this was a perfect call down. This was like a slight from Levine, who's like, got to get Betances in. This is coming down from the top. Bring in Betances. I want to embarrass him. There's no reason he should be in this game. Bring him in. We haven't seen him in a while. It's like one of those just ridiculous, like, doesn't happen. Was Girardi, was he high? What was going on? It made no sense to me. I could not believe that he was trotting in to go to the mound. It was stupid.
I'm split on this because I'm not defending the move because it was utterly ridiculous and you just want the game to be over at that point and we got to go sit through a pitching change is a joke. But I understand the logic of getting him work because game action is different than just throwing bullpen pitches. Bullpen pitches, we've joked, does put stress on the arm, but he was clearly rusty. So say the Yankees had been in a save situation on Friday night and he hadn't pitched, maybe he would have shown that rust and then they would have blown the game. I mean, so there's always that sort of chess match.
There were other opportunities in that series to get him in the game. There were other opportunities to get him in and get him work. Why then?
Tuesday night when the game was a 1-run ball game.
Yes, exactly. I was calling for him and Joe's not even going looking near this dude. The other thing, if it's to get him work, okay, and that was you were going to go in there to get him work, why are you doing it with one out? Why are you not just bringing him in to start the inning then to get his work? I don't understand it. It makes no freaking sense. You want to get work, a practice with a guy with one run or with a one out? Like, I don't understand the move.
Hypothetical situation. The guy grounds out to second base on the first pitch. How does that achieve anything for Dylan Betances?
It doesn't. It does nothing. It's stupid. It's mind-boggling. Like Zach is saying, it's mind-boggling. And yeah, there are advanced metrics. And I love advanced metrics. They're so awesome. They tell the whole story every time. But I mean, look at the moves that Girardi has made, and look at the guys who he's had for the past couple years too. Look at the back end of the bullpen. Kind of hard to make a difficult or to make the wrong move when you got Chapman, Miller, and Betances back there, or Betances and Chapman. I mean, you're pretty good with those two guys back there.
Yeah, but Girardi always gets Tommy Lane into the right situation.
Yeah, what, packing his bags and going to Scranton? Because that's where he is now.
Exactly, DFA'd. All right, what do we have next?
Next one is from Michael. He said, what do you think about making Chad Green the permanent seventh-inning pitcher? Regardless of Clippard's stats, he has faltered in several important moments, and being a fly ball pitcher in Yankee Stadium doesn't typically bode well. Green throws heat, seems more reliable, and doesn't seem like he has a role as a starter with the emergence of Seve, Monty, and Adams in eventually, he says. So yeah, I think it's a solid point.
Well, first of all, what did you think of Chad Green's performance today? Because he was on a 50 pitch count. So that already hamstrings the pitcher, right? He's got to be perfect when he's on a pitch count. He got through the first two innings, but every batter was like 3-2, which is fine if you're only pitching one inning. But when you're trying to extend yourself into a game, it doesn't really work out.
Yeah, see, I'm not even so much like when you look at an opportunity and when you look at a situation and we're saying that he's got 50 pitches, so he's got to pitch differently because of that. Like, to me, that's almost just an excuse. I mean, that was the situation. He's got to just, you know, effectively manage that situation and pitch as well as you can. So if you're struggling in something like that, then it's still on you. I mean, I don't like changing a guy's role all over the place. I'm not in favor of that. That's not something I would do or I like seeing Girardi do. So, you know, that's not to say that he's got to be locked into a specific inning, but I think pitchers can get into a routine and get into some kind of a mode if they know kind of their job, you know, whether it's they could be stretched to two innings on a given day, or they are going to get a spot start, or I don't know. So I feel like you got to be, especially with a young guy like that, you got to be a little bit more clear in what your objective is for him, you know, throughout a week or, you know, throughout his time in the major leagues. And he's just been bounced around a lot. I do like him in the bullpen, though. I think seventh inning guy, like, again, I don't like having a designated seventh inning guy personally, but I think he does really well in those one inning, maybe, you know, one and two thirds, possibly two inning situations. I think Chad Green is more built for that because he ramps up the velocity and he's got a number of pitches to get through.
Yeah, unless you have Dellin Betances, Andrew Miller, and Aroldis Chapman, so you have a seventh, eighth inning guy.
Right.
Like, we're not going to label Chad Green or Tyler Clippard a seventh inning guy. Like, they're not good enough to warrant that.
Right.
You know what I mean? Like, well, they're just going to pitch when the situation warrants itself in the ball game. Well, it might be the seventh inning. It's probably usually going to be the seventh inning. But just because – I'm not going to say Chad Green or Tyler Clippard's a seventh inning guy and I got to go to him in the seventh inning. I'm going to figure out what's going on in the game, and maybe it's not the right time to use Chad Green, so I'm not going to use Chad Green.
But that's not what Girardi does if you look at the history. That's not typically of what he does. But that's
he
what we've been calling
eighth inning
for.
Guys, but he has eighth and ninth inning guys, but I don't think, but other than last year with the three-headed monster, he had a seventh inning guy.
I mean, Clippard was the Clippard's been the seventh inning guy. He's the go-to.
It was Clippard and Warren.
But I'm saying now, Clippard is the go-to seventh inning guy. If there's a guy out there, and it's most likely going to be Clippard. Most likely. Sometimes it's not, but most likely it is. The more times than not, it's Clippard. I don't know. Girardi likes that structure, but this is the same type of situation. I don't even want to have 100% eighth inning guy. Like, I want some flexibility with that. This goes back to that game in Toronto. Like, I want Betances in a situation where he can take care of the middle, the heart of that lineup, when the situation is calling for that, so that the game can be almost shortened because you're getting rid of the best part of their lineup in a crucial part of the game. I want that flexibility, and I want Girardi to be able to use his guys in that way. So, I don't know. I think I just have a different philosophy when he is, and I'm not sure he's really going to that. We thought there were hints of that, but it really does seem like he's trying to settle guys into a specific role.
Let's see what happens when Chapman's healthy.
Right, that's true.
Because he's pitching with a short bullpen at this point, and everyone's moved up to you're moved up when your closer's out. So it puts everybody out of position. But I want to also go back to the fact that the Yankees had to push Tanaka. So they're in a situation where they have to start Chad Green on a 50 pitch count. That already puts you in a corner.
Right.
They had to call up Domingo German, or is it Herman?
Herman.
He made his major league debut.
Look good, too.
Pretty good, yeah. He's kind of a tiny guy, a lot of torque in his windup. But so they had to call him up, and they're in a position where Chad Green's on a 50 pitch count. That's a bad position that the Yankees were in today because Tanaka had to be pushed,
yeah.
And it didn't matter because the Yankees are drubbing the ball. But it could have mattered. And it looked like for a little while it was going to matter when it was a 5-3 ball game.
It's true. And I don't want to – like, I want them to fix Tanaka. So over the fact that, like, I'm not going to complain that they did that because I want him to get fixed. So if this is part of the solution to get him fixed in the long term, then whatever. It is what it is. And, like, they were mashing the ball. So, like, I understand the situation and the predicament. It was not an ideal one. The whole situation's not ideal. But they're going to do what they got to do to get through it. So – what I do like is when you see Domingo German, that guy, he's like I can't think of this dude's name that I have in my head. Eduardo Ramirez. Yeah, similar build, right? Like, he's like a lanky 6'1", 6'2" guy, and he comes in and just throws good stuff. This Domingo German throws what, high 90s, got fastball, slider, so he's got like end of the bullpen stuff. I like it.
He was the guy who also came over in that Martin Prado trade with Nathan Eovaldi.
Yes, absolutely correct. So it's paying off.
And he had surgery.
He had Tommy John.
He was out for a while.
Yeah.
But it's coming back. That.
And he came up. He came up from Double A too. He made a jump from Double A to Triple A, and then Triple A to the major. So I mean, this is a significant jump from a guy in the minor leagues that really wasn't too much on everybody's radar. If you're looking at minor league guys coming up to the majors in 17.
Our last mailbag question is from Lacey, and she says, I know it's a little early to talk playoffs, but given what we have seen of the starting rotation so far this season, who would you give the ball to for a one-game wild card? So I thought this was interesting because I wanted to – I think to me it's clearly between two pitchers, and I just want to see who you think those two pitchers are and who you would go to.
Oh, boy. I think it depends on who you're playing, one. I think it depends on where you're playing. I think there's situations to go into it. Right now, if you're giving it to somebody, I think it's going to go to Severino. I could see Sabathia getting the ball, though.
Interesting. Okay. Well, I definitely would give it to Severino as well, but I was thinking potentially Pineda would be the second guy.
See, I still don't think anybody trusts Pineda. Pineda's like completely, mind-boggling that he's doing as well as he is, which I'm happy about, but I don't think anybody trusts him. I think they have more trust in CC in a big game.
Right. You'd at least say, okay, I know CC can give me five innings and we'll be in the game.
Yeah.
Yes, Pineda might go seven and be lights out, but he also might give up seven home runs and walk a bunch of guys and have flailing arms.
Yes, exactly. I think Severino right now is the pretty obvious guy.
Yes.
He's been lights out, dominant stuff right now. I mean, he's got everything working. His confidence is there. He's the guy.
He's the number one pitcher in the making that we hoped he would be when we saw him in 2015.
Absolutely. It's all coming together, knock on wood, but it's all coming together. And I think it's very clear that he's the guy.
So yes, while it is too early to be setting up your playoff rotation at this point, talking about these Yankees in the playoffs is not too early, because at this point, if they don't make the playoffs, I think everyone's going to be disappointed.
Yeah. The expectations are definitely different now than they were on opening day.
Yeah, I'd say so. All right, guys, if you want to get in touch with us, you can tweet us at Yankees Podcast. My handle is at Andrew_Rotondi. Scott's is at Scott Reinen. Submit mailbag questions at BronxPinstripes.com/podcast and call the voicemail line 646-480-0342. We've got some good voicemails coming up. And again, thanks everybody who came out to the event on Saturday. It was a hell of a time. I know Scott and I really appreciate it. Scott, anything you want to say?
Just to reiterate, yeah, great time on Saturday. Looking forward to hanging out with everybody again at the next one, and get some sleep this week. We're on the West Coast, so it's going to be a long week.
Believe it or not, George isn't at home. Please leave a message at the beep.
I must be out, or I pick up the phone.
Where could I be? Believe it or not, I'm not home.
I mean, at this point, Aaron Judge can sleep with my wife.
Let's go, Yankees!
Are you kidding me? Aaron Judge, 495 feet? What a legend, man. What a legend. MVP.
I'm so sick and tired of every fifth start getting excited for Tanaka's name to come around. And him just fucking blowing the game up. It's like he doesn't even care. He's throwing balls over the middle of the strike zone for players to just knock out of the park. And I'm sick of it. He's not worth the money. He's going to stay into that contract. We got to trade him, right? We got to do something. He's a piece of work. And
I finally picked that up to knock out and help me. Let him pitch full speed from the mound to Aaron Judge in the home run derby. It's a win-win. Judge will win, and he'll hit a lot of home runs.
What's up, guys? Justin from South Ozone Park. Enough of Chase Headley. It's time to start playing pesty Ronald Torres mold. The guy led the Yankees in RBIs for most of April, along with Judge and Castro. He's a good fielder, too. He's fast. He showed he can get the job done filling in for Didi in April. Time to start playing him more. I've had enough of Chase Headley. I've had enough of his errors. Enough. Stop playing Torres more.
Hey, guys. Greg from New York. Watching the Red Sox Yanks right now. Just watched Gary Sanchez bang out a two-run homer. Sorry, that's actually a three-run homer. On top of that, I think the next inning or two innings after, watched Sammy Ramirez bang into a double play. I don't think it gets much better than that.
Look, I don't know if I'm the only one who feels this way, but when I hear the Cars for Kids jingle, I turn my fucking radio off, I wait 30 seconds, and then I listen to W Fan. Every time I hear that stupid song, I want to drive off the road. I get a twitch. There's nothing good about Cars for Kids songs. The not-for-profit, if it is a great thing.
Yeah, this is Greg from Florida. I'm listening to the game right now, and they say that Tyler Austin is not a fit because Chris Carter's up there. I almost crashed my car. I mean, what what does Chris Carter have that we're not seeing? Seriously.
You gotta be kidding me. Three run jack. Gary Sanchez, he is back. He is on fire. He's smoking the Orioles.
What's up, guys? I just want to say I'm about to head to the airport and fly up to New York for the weekend. I'm super pumped for the game on Saturday. If Chris Carter's badass somehow hits a home run and I somehow catch it, I swear to God I'll throw it back on the field. I cannot stand this guy.
Andrew from Mel's Kitchen. Freaking great win tonight. June 10th event tomorrow. So fucking hype. Although, honestly, I don't really understand all the tape for Clifford. I mean, I get it, you know, there's the whole eye test, maybe this stuff doesn't look, you know, 1.88 ERA good. But here's the thing about Clifford, you know, as a fastball changeup guy, I feel like it's easier to see where his pitch is going to be, but it's harder to time. And, you know, that's why he's been effective throughout pretty much all of his career. You know, as a reliever, never had an ERA before, only 1 year, ERA above 3.5. Hey, Bronx Pinstripers, I really like the British voicemail lady. She's sexy. Anyway, for the older listeners of this podcast, if you've ever seen the Stallone classic from 1987 called Over the Top, where he's a truck-driving arm wrestler, the villain in that movie, his catchphrase is also applied to the Yankees with David Price. I own you!
Hey guys, thanks for listening to the Bronx Pinstripe Show. Make sure you find us on iTunes and subscribe so you can get all new episodes directly onto your phone. If you do like the show, we'd love for you to take a minute and give us a 5-star rating and review in iTunes. It really helps us out and allows us to create more shows. We're on Twitter at Bronx Pinstripes and the same on Facebook. You can always find us there talking Yankee baseball. Thanks again, guys, for your support. Really appreciate it. And go Yankees.